Welcome to the Soft Tattooed Millionaires. I'm your host, Max, along with my brother, Jack, who, true story, is sitting on a pile of sweatpants right now.
It's true. My dog was making too much noise, so I have sequestered myself in my closet. I am sitting next to a pair of slippers that are printed with eggs and bacon, and a bunch of old sweatpants. Yeah, this is what this is what I do for my love of soccer.
All right. Well, so I thought it would be great for us to start off today and just talk about some things that we are thankful for. And why don't you start off? What are you thankful for most with regards to American soccer?
It shocks me. It might shock you. The thing I'm most thankful for right now is actually Alexi Lawless. Yeah, after listening to our first episode and having to edit the audio, I thought, Jack, you are such a dick. I thought, Alexi Lawless is performing a public good. He gets to be angry on television for all of us who are angry in private. After listening to our post-pubescent SpongeBob voices for hours on end, I thought we can only wish and dream and hope to reach the heights that Alexi Lawless has reached.
That's true. And I mean, thinking about it, how lucky are we to have multiple famous rants? Twelman, Lawless, Jermaine Jones.
All incredible.
All of these. All incredible. Maybe that is something good to have come out of all of the crappiness lately with the U.S. men's team. Something I am thankful for are the absurdly obscure slash probably never going to play or contribute to the U.S. men's national team players that I nonetheless like to keep track of. So that's Anthony Robinson, for example, the guys who have either played a little bit with the U.S. youth teams or are now being called up to U.S. youth teams in the case of the Wolves player, and all those little guys that have no chance or very little chance of contributing, but nonetheless, I really like to keep track of them and follow them along. It gives me something small to have a little bit of hope about. So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, these are your 3 a.m. on Wikipedia.
Yes, loves, exactly. Right? And they're the kind of people who are like, oh, I saw that guy mentioned. You look him up, and then your like brain explodes when you see that, like, oh, his dad is American. He's theoretically eligible to play for the U.S. men's national team.
Exactly.
There's a chance he may, even though, like, you know, there's very little connection. But yes, so grateful for all those.
Yes, I get very excited when I see the words American serviceman in Germany.
Yes, indeed. So I'm grateful for all those guys for sure. And I have to say that I am grateful that you have done a bunch of work lately securing us some interviews for this podcast, including the one that we're going to play in a minute with Luchi Gonzalez. Tell me, who is Luchi Gonzalez?
Luchi Gonzalez is first and foremost out of our league. He is the FC Dallas Academy director.
So out of our league.
It's amazing. It is amazing. Absurd. Yes.
We are just like two guys. You are sitting on a pile of sweatpants.
Yeah.
And like hours ago, you interviewed Luchi Gonzalez.
Yes. So, the director for the most successful MLS Academy. I'm so glad it wasn't a video chat, or else he would have had to look at all of my dirty laundry.
This is amazing. Let's, without further ado, let's listen to the interview.
Luchi Gonzalez began his soccer journey outside of Miami, in Hialeah, Florida. He got his first taste of soccer in Dallas while playing for Southern Methodist University, where, in 2001, he won the Herman Trophy. After a seven-year career in the MLS, Peru, and Sweden, as well as a brief stint teaching college algebra, Luchi came to the vaunted FC Dallas Academy. In 2015, he was promoted to Academy Director, and the very next year, their U16 and U18 teams won the U.S. Soccer Academy National Championships. So, my first question for you is this. What makes the FC Dallas Academy such a special and successful place?
Well, thank you for having me on the show, first of all. Honored to give any insight I can about the game and the U.S.'s opportunities moving forward with its development. But, you know, I don't think there's one thing I can put my finger on that allows FC Dallas to do what it does. And I think there's several factors, and they all work together to allow FC Dallas to find success in development and putting players on the first team or allowing to compete with its academy teams and try to win trophies, which we feel go hand in hand. So number one, obviously, you know our ownership's vision and their values and their support about young players from our academy impacting the first team. So they don't just say it, they act it. They support us with amazing resources and facilities that that we're privileged to have in terms of our fields. We have locker rooms, we have space to develop these players. We don't ever have an issue regarding space. We have that support from them in terms of their funding and you know, being in the USSDA, playing in the academy, traveling internationally to do tournaments, it's not very economical. It takes investment and it takes money. And our owners are willing to back up their belief in our young players and investing in the academy. So we're really privileged there. Another factor is our head coach and our first team staff. Three of the five members of the first team coach in the academy. Oscar was a director himself in the academy in FC Dallas. So there's this strong belief and desire and conviction to give young players opportunities from the academy to make an impact in the first team. There's the daily integration. Our academy is able to train in the mornings, which they do so side by side with the professional team and their field. And there's just every day, there's whether it's two or three guys or 10 guys that go across the fence, join the first team training, get integrated into their exercises and their games with the first team staff, observing them and seeing how they fare against the pro players, and them getting an experience of higher tempo, higher speed, higher technique, higher level of thinking of game and execution, more physicality. So they're exposed to a higher level. They're challenged during the week so that they can adapt and show that they can play at that level. So that's another factor I think that's been really beneficial. And that there's two things that I think are play with that. It's the fact that our first team staff is really, they really embrace that we are next to them training side by side. And our school program, we work with the Frisco Independent School District, and they allow us to have a schedule that our older players, our older age groups can train in the morning and get PE credit for their training and then go to school from 10:30 a.m. until 4:15 p.m. So our relationship with the school district is that we're very fortunate to have that. So our players are student athletes of the program, and the schedule allows them to have that integration with the pro team in the mornings. And then lastly, I would say is, two more things I would think are a piece of this. We are big on international competition. We will go to Mexico multiple times a year with different age groups, play friendlies, play tournaments. It's not too far from us. So we'll either bus to Monterrey or we'll fly to Guadalajara or fly to Mexico City. And we believe Mexico youth teams and academies are fantastic level globally. And we learn a lot in those environments. And so we try to be involved in as many international events as possible with all of our ages, even down to our U9, U10s, U11s, all the way up to our U19s. So we want our player at U19 to have at least 60 plus international club games under their belt before they get there. So that gives them the opportunity to get out of their comfort zone, adapt to different styles of play, adapt to different cultures, and really for us become a little more complete player than just relying on domestic competition. And then the last thing I think is just the amazing people we have in the staff, our coaches, our directors. You know, everyone is just really committed and passionate about these players, you know, coming through the pathway. And if they're not going to be in our first team, they're gonna very minimum earn a college scholarship somewhere. That forever they're gonna be a family member of FC Dallas, and that it's just a spirit and a passion that the coaches model and the players, you know, coaches transfer that to the players, and they carry it through generation after generation. And it's really, I think we have a really competitive program internally, with passion and spirit for the jersey, for the training Monday through Friday. And I can't thank our staff enough for their commitment to that idea.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm curious, does the rivalry between Mexico and the U.S. extend to even the academy games? Do those games get a little chippy?
100%. Awesome. They're very chippy. They're full of pride and competitive spirit. I think years ago, maybe even when we started our academy and maybe when the USSDA first started, we were always that underdog with Mexican clubs. And I think we were maybe not going to have as much possession, maybe not create as many opportunities, not have enough pressure on the ball. I think all the clubs in the USSDA and a lot of the clubs in MLS, academies in MLS, we've improved a lot to now go to Mexico or host teams from Mexico, youth academies, 19, 17, 16, 15, and compete and beat them. And not just even, you know, try to make an impact in terms of the stats of the game and possession and key passes and passes in the offensive third and shots on goal, shots, just general shots. You know, I think all those statistics, we now are competing with statistically, and we're competing in the scoreline in terms of our desire and our determination and our street smarts to win the games. So I see that in FC Dallas, and I do see it in the other clubs as well. And I think we're doing a better job competing with our youth academies internationally.
That's amazing. I want to get back to something that you said earlier about really giving these homegrown players a chance to play in the first team. FC Dallas has signed a record 18 homegrown players for its first team. Can you tell me a little bit what it feels like to give a kid his first pro contract, especially after spending years nurturing and developing them?
It's an interesting process. Not every single player that we've had the privilege to sign was a different process. Different age, different position, different social economics, different family profile, and different cultural backgrounds. So it's been really diverse, all the experiences we've had in signing the different players. And some have really, they are still in our professional team and finding success there. Others are still in the professional team, but are yet to really break through and be consistent impact players. And others, unfortunately, are not there anymore. You know, they move on to other clubs, other professional clubs, or not playing anymore, or decided to pursue education and another career or coaching or teaching. And then you've got ones that we wanted to sign that didn't end up signing with us and are having successful careers elsewhere. So you kind of see the spectrum of all the players that we've had coming through the academy. First of all, I think it's more important today now that we identify the pro prospects young. We find that if we wait till 17, 18, that's an age that those are players debuting already in other countries, you know, world-class soccer development countries. So I think now we're more committed to, you know, the process of identifying pro prospects now at the younger ages, U15, U16, definitely no later than U17. So that is going to be, I think, beneficial for not just us, for all the MLS academies moving forward. That doesn't mean that U19 player you have that's really good can't still sign and make it, or even have a college career make it, but you have to now create a process that allows your club to identify the players younger, so that you can be clear to the family about what the plan is, and the club can and commit to how they're going to mold this player and add ingredients to this player's experience so that they can be a complete young professional one day. You know, I can put, you know, on record, I can say we're going to have a second team for 2019 professional team. And that's going to be, for me, huge to bridge that gap between the 17, 18 year old to the 22, 23 year old professional on our first team. So we're looking forward to that addition to our development model. And that will be a big challenge in itself. I think we've heard a lot of the experiences of the other MLS clubs and their second teams and what has worked and maybe what has not. And I think we're going to have that ability to now learn from those experiences and do what we feel is best in our community and our club, with our vision, with our young players and the second team. We envision our second team to be predominantly a U19 team with the addition of very young professionals that come from our academy or not, potentially internationally, and obviously the first team players that need game minutes, you know. So, but saying it and doing it are two different things. So we're looking forward to getting that started and learning our own lessons through the experience. But the young players that we've had the privilege to sign, and again, I think it's never there's never a pure science to it. It's not black or white. It's a one day at a time process that involves communicating with the player, with with the parent, depending on the age, and the club getting together and really dissecting and analyzing and projecting the depth chart of the pro team, not just this year, but next year and in 2 or 3 years. So it's a much more in-depth process today than it was 2 years ago, than it was 5 years ago, and definitely than it was 10 years ago. But we're more prepared than I think ever. And I think next year we'll be even more prepared. So we're trying to improve that process for sure.
When someone comes to you and says, I have an amazing U16 talent, how much scouting has gone into that person up until the point where it sort of reaches your desk?
First of all, if it's a reference that we know very well, it's a friend, a coach that knows, it's one of our coaches, know that coach well and respect that coach and feel they're credible and respect their eye, respect their evaluation. A reference is usually, at least for us, enough to have a kid come in and at the very least train and be integrated into our training and be assessed and evaluated there with our staff. Another way is video. You know, I get many emails a day about, and so does every other MLS academy, I'm sure. We get emails from players that wish to be in our academy, but there's no video and there's no reference that we know. So those are rare cases that we would accept a player to come in and train and be evaluated because we don't know about them, you know? So video is always going to allow us to see that player in their element and have a preliminary assessment of them. And that preliminary assessment will lead to us inviting them for a trial. We currently just started having a full-time head of scouting in our academy, in our older age groups, and one in our young age groups. And that's new for us. So we're beginning to discover that process. And we don't have any paid scouts that work with the club that are not here at our office or on site, both domestically and internationally. And I know some other MLS clubs do. So I think that's going to be maybe something in our staffing address in the future, I would think. But again, that takes investment and it takes time to get to that point. So we rely a lot on our affiliate clubs. We have multiple affiliates in El Paso, Tennessee, different parts of Dallas, different parts of Texas, Midlands, Laredo. And we really have a good communication with our affiliates regarding the scouting. So those are kind of our scouts, kind of unofficial scouts, those directors and coaches of the affiliate clubs that we have. They're informing us of their players and which ones they recommend to come in. And we're a big youth club. We've got over 4,000 kids in our youth club, boys and girls. And you know, Dallas is a big youth soccer city. So we've got a great foundation in our youngest age group. Just in our youth club on site here at Toyota Soccer Center, we've got over 10 U11 teams. That just shows you the amount of players in our foundation in the young ages. So we also are very dependent on our youth coaches to be open and honest and clear with us, not hide players, and make sure that the top players are being seen by our academy. So, you know, it's something that we're learning to improve each year. I think we've got a lot of the top talent in Dallas, but we're not comfortable right now. We want to continue to have more of the talent in Dallas, more of the talent in Texas, in our territories and in non-territories, you know, because for me, there are three or four pillars to developing a professional player. One is your methodology, your coaching, your curriculum that your coaches implement, and the environment that your coaches provide for your players. Two is your competition, both domestic and international, and in training and in games. Your competition allows your players to be challenged, be out of their comfort zones enough so that they can respond and learn and make better decisions the next experience. So that process is important. That's the second one. Number three is for us really important. I think the talent, and that talent, a lot of it is genetics and a lot of it's raw talent. And, you know, but we can really influence that talent and mold it and add ingredients to it and identify it properly and have a process that it's identified and is integrated into the program. So that piece we're really trying to improve. Is talent ID, know what kind of players we're looking for and how to bring them into the club and not just bringing them into the club, but then integrating them into being successful players and people in our academy and hopefully being our first team. So, you know, we're the town is important, and the ability to identify it. This is a newer thing for MLS and for our country. But I think I see more and more investment in it than before.
I'll ask one last question. I know you're busy. FC Dallas, a little bit of a disappointing year for you guys. What do you see as the biggest challenge in the coming year?
The ownership and technical directors and the pro staff, obviously, you know, they do their reflections every season, good or bad. And it was a tale of two halves in the season, right, where the program started very strong and we're doing well in terms of points. And then it was difficult to sustain the points they needed to then ultimately get into the playoffs, even though we were in a position to get into the playoffs and up until the very last game. But the people talking about that, they're all professional. And like I said, even when we had a successful season, they're going to reflect and want to get better. So the club's always going to want to improve and get better. And, you know, it's never easy with international breaks. And we have quite a few players that represent their national teams. And I know other MLS clubs do too. So those are sometimes challenges that can affect the season in the middle of its season. And, you know, I think just moving forward and like every successful team, I think the club is continuing to try to have depth, you know, and work towards a roster that is not dropping off after man 11, man 12, man 13, that there's a big disparity between its potential starting player and its non-starter, you know, and I think the league is trying to improve that. You can see it kind of maybe in game minutes or percentages. So it's really our responsibility in the academy to really try to close that gap and make sure that man 17 is not a big drop off, that he can easily come in and be in that roster and or be in that lineup and compete and maintain the level high in the training and in the games so that they can find success in the league. So that's our challenge in the academy and everybody in the ownership and the technical directors and the first team staff. We're communicating every day to continue to find ways for our young players in this community, in our academy, to develop tools that are going to allow them to compete and keep that level really high with our professionals, no matter their age, you know. And we talk about our players, they need potentially to be more stressed. You know, I think players in this country, growing youth soccer, they play because it's fun and it's a hobby and they love it and they can go on and be a college player, potentially a pro. But we're not comparing ourselves to – I don't think our comparisons are to just ourselves from 10 years ago. We need to compare it to players in Europe, players in South America with a real desperation to be a professional. I mean, their life, their ability to provide for their family depends on how well they train on Tuesday when he's 16 years old with a pro team to earn a contract. So that moment that he gets to train with a pro team is everything for that kid. And that kid's going to do everything he can to earn a spot and take the job of a player that is also providing for his family, but older and more experienced, you know? So that constant competition and that desperation to make it, we have to make sure that we have elements of that. Now, we have a culture in our country that is not going to be like South America, but can we embrace our culture in our community in Dallas, which is different than New York, which is different than LA, but can we embrace ours in Dallas? So our kids are in an academy environment dealing with stress, but in a positive way, you know, like the urgency of an exercise or the, you know, one player against two defenders or a game that's in a tight space, so they got to make quick decisions, or they're down a score and now they've got to respond to that. And the coach has their way. It's an art. The coach has their way to provide that environment for the player. Sometimes it's the coach's voice or his tone or his demand of urgency or tempo or just good decision making or execution of whatever they're doing in the exercise or game. But we are trying to be creative with our ways to put players in a stressful environment, but in a positive one that they can find solutions to that and build thick skin and build resilience and not give up and push and push and not give up and find solutions and have their back against the wall and have a taste of success and competing to win and playing intelligently in our style, within our model, and doing those things so that when they step on that training field with the pro team for the first time, they're hungry. They're going to take advantage of it. And that's going to help them be even more ready to potentially sign and impact the first team and not just be happy to be there. So we want to take that next step. I think you talked about our history where we know that we've had some success signing players. Now we want to take the next level and not just have success signing players, but have success of the players that we sign impact the first team and help this club win a trophy.
That's beautiful. I love thinking about the hunger that American youth needs to have when competing at the highest level. Well, thank you so much for coming on the pod today. I wish you and the rest of the FC Dallas all the success, hunger, and triumph for next season.
Todd, thanks for having me. A pleasure to be on the show, and thank you for the attention of the program. And we're learning, like everybody else in MLS and in this country, and World Cup or not, we're going to be better from it. We're going to bounce back as a nation, and at the club level, I know we're all taking steps to get better, and it's happening with time, but it's also going to happen because we're going to reflect and realize things that we want to adapt and adjust to. So, pleasure to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
Well, that was great. Still a little bit, can't believe that we scored that interview.
Yeah, he must have had me mistaken with the other Soft Tattooed Millionaires podcast.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyone so who responds to an email, subject line, Soft Tattooed Millionaires, thank you.
Yeah, this would be a great time now to mention that anyone who wants to get a question on the show can send us an email at softtattooedmillionaires@gmail.com. Or if you've got interview suggestions or want to be featured on the podcast, let us know. We'll work out some of those details. So let's move on and talk a little bit about the MLS playoff games. Tell me, what were your thoughts on the Columbus game?
Well, I think everything...
Because before I let you talk, it is the Columbus game. It's not the Columbus-Toronto game. It's the Columbus game,
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely. If you are not a fan of the Columbus Crew right now, there is something seriously fucking wrong with you, or you're from Toronto.
I mean, I would agree with that. So what do you think about the game itself? How did that play out?
I thought it was actually fairly boring. I think all fans were waiting to see that Columbus Crew goal go in and to have the stadium erupt and for all of us to experience this collective ecstasy. But it didn't happen. Toronto adjusted. They added one more person in the midfield due to the suspensions of Jozy Altidore and Sebastian Giovinco, their two best players. Columbus Crew dominated possession, created a lot of chance, but nothing serious. Everything that was interesting about this game was actually what surrounded it.
Including what Bradley said after the game. After the game, a reporter asked him about the Save the Crew movement and Columbus's seemingly pending departure. And he said, "You feel for the small group. You feel for the small group of loyal supporters that they have, who have been here since the beginning, who continue to support the team and come out week after week. On the other hand, you can't deny the fact that things here have really fallen behind in terms of the atmosphere in the stadium, the quality of the stadium, what it's like to play here." And then he goes on to say, "The reality is just that as the league has continued to grow and grow, this is not the only one, but this is one of the few markets that has not kept pace." Mm-hmm. So basically he's saying, hey, listen, the Crew are leaving Columbus, and the reason is obvious. The writing is on the wall. This market has not continued to keep pace. The stadium's old-fashioned. The fans have dwindled.
Yep.
Man, Michael Killer. Bradley.
Yeah, he's embracing his turn as a heel. He's going for it, yeah.
Ah.
I know. I loved him when he first burst on the scene because it seemed like he has a chip on his shoulder. Now it seems like he has a chip on both shoulders.
Yes, I would agree. And it, I mean... wow, and you watch the games, and you hear the second he touches the ball, people start booing him.
Yeah.
Man, he's just one of these people where familiarity breeds contempt, where I think, feel like American soccer fans have just been around Bradley so much that they've just he of all people comes to represent the sort of like the struggles and the status quo of American soccer. And so people just throw that hatred at him, and he is now throwing it kind of back, but tactfully.
Yeah. Well, I think the important question is he actually wrong? Is this a case of the Columbus crew and Columbus in general not knowing what they have until it's gone or almost gone, or not knowing what they have until it's in Texas? That Taylor Twellman said something very similar on the television broadcast, in that he's never seen the parking lot as full. He's never seen the stadium as full. So it is up for debate whether this is just a bump in support due to the imminent move to Texas, or if this is sincere. And I think if any other player on Toronto that was not involved in the U.S. men's national team's failure had said this, it would not have been as controversial.
That's probably true. When you're talking about the bump in support, you're literally talking about the sort of like atmosphere, and you're saying that this people who are now tuning into Columbus games, they're seeing the sort of crowds and the chanting and all that kind of stuff, but you're saying that may be just a product of the playoffs, and that there's some accuracy if to what Bradley's saying and what Twellman's saying, is that Columbus hasn't held up its end of the bargain, or that is a legitimate criticism of them. That's brutal, man.
I know, and I mean, I really do feel for the crew. I want them to beat Toronto.
Counterpoint. Yeah. Okay, you say that, but at the same time, Bradley's comments about the stadium falling behind, or other people talking about how small the stadium is and all that kind of stuff, some of that has to do with the way, no doubt, the team is, the ownership runs, and the nature of professional sports in America, which is that they rely on public financing for stadiums. And if I'm an owner and I want the team to move, I'm not going to put money, effort, energy into trying to get public financing, get bigger and better sponsorships. I'm going to make my team as easy as it is as possible to pick up and move someplace else.
Yes. So, I mean, there was a report on NBC Sports that Precourt had limited access to the game. He closed down a couple of gates to the stadium so that it would appear half empty to the TV cameras. So yeah. I'm going to steal this joke from you, and I'm going to do it without remorse. He is like the owner from Major League.
Yes, he is. And if you haven't seen the movie, to our two listeners out there, that is the movie, that's a baseball movie, right? And the owner is trying to move the team, and they have a cardboard cutout of her in the locker room. Mm-hmm. And for every win they have, they take off a piece of her clothing in the cardboard cutout.
Yeah,
which is kind of creepy.
I don't think that would fly nowadays.
No, that would definitely not fly, but you know, 90s movie standards, that was somehow still okay.
Yeah. I also don't think Anthony Precourt is quite as sexy, but
no, he's a very jowled man.
Yeah. He's a cartoon villain right now, as like in all aspects.
Yeah, he looks like I don't like to make jokes about people's appearances, but he does look sort of something like the like caricature in my mind of a jowled capitalist, you know?
Yes.
Like a man who likes steak and potatoes and has opinions about stocks.
So just our future.
That's not my future.
Okay, well, we can all
dream. What are you talking about? You're sitting Mr. Sweatpants over there?
I thought you said opinions on socks. Yeah, I have opinions on socks.
No. I said opinions about stocks.
Oh, that's my fault. Sorry, yeah.
Okay. One thing that I saw that I wanted to bring up was that I saw that Marcus Rashford mentioned who his idol growing up was, and that was Tim Howard, of all people.
This is so amazing.
It is amazing. Man, and I can't think of not even Everton fans probably idolized Tim Howard. So whatever Marcus Rashford saw in Tim Howard, more power to him. And I mean, obviously, you know, I loved watching Tim Howard play for the U.S. men's national team, but still, Way to go.
I would like to see Marcus Rashford emulate Tim Howard a little bit more. I'd like to see some more ink. I'd like to see him grow a Father Time beard and shave his head. I'd like for Marcus Rashford to beef up. I love it. I mean, I don't know why everyone seems to be so surprised at this announcement that an outfield player could love a goalie, but this does not shock me whatsoever. I mean, I know who our first true soccer love was, and that was San Oswaldo. Oswaldo Sanchez.
Yes. Sometime Mexican national team goalie, longtime Chivas goalie, Oswaldo Sanchez.
Longtime Santos goalie as well. I think the first thing we fell in love with him was his unibrow. It was a surface level sort of crush, but then it became very real. I loved watching him play on Chivas.
Yeah.
He was the first player I ever connected with for no good reason.
I think that's one of the interesting things about, you know, sports. I remember my favorite baseball player growing up was BJ Surhoff, because he was like the only member of the Brewers who didn't have a beard. And I liked that for some reason when I was like 4 years old or whatever.
It should be said that most of the time we both have beards.
That's very true. But like, you know, it's like there are these weird things about players that you like when you're that young.
Yeah.
Something about the way they look, the way they carry themselves, their style. Yeah.
I loved Daryl Armstrong of the Orlando Magic, and I couldn't tell you why. I think I just saw I think I saw a game of his where he did an incredible dunk. He's like the most average player.
Yeah.
I loved him. I remember waking up in the morning, opening the paper and looking for the box scores just so I could see if he had scored more or less than 10 points.
Mm-hmm. These like irrational loves we have of sports players, I think are, you know, or for me, what kind of makes sports. Like I mentioned at the onset of this podcast, like rooting for these random players who have a vague connection to the U.S. team that they might make it through. Like those kind of little things make watching soccer or sports in general just so much more entertaining for me.
Yeah, there's nothing so rational about sports. Yes,
yeah,
totally.
Absolutely. I embrace the irrational.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, we would love to hear from our listeners, talking to you, Mr. Lawless. If you guys have an interesting first soccer love, please email us, tweet us. Tweet us at SoftTattooFC or email us at softtattooedmillionaires@gmail.com. Send us your stories about your first soccer loves. If you hate Oswaldo Sanchez, don't email me. I don't want to hear from you. Don't ever listen to me again. Send us Waldo.
And if you are Oswaldo Sanchez, email us. We'll set up the interview. All right. Thanks for joining us this week. Have a good rest of your day. Say goodbye to those sweatpants for me.
It's getting kind of cozy in here, so I might just stay.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining us this week, and we'll have some cool interviews up for you guys in short time after this.
Thanks, guys.